Buffalo, New York. It's The Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
Podcast doesn't make any money. Welcome to The Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast. We don't have a script, and I can't think of anything funny off the top of my head. Hey, Cassie, it's good to see you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we're funny looking. It's a shame that we're on the podcast.
We lost our video capabilities, but they'll come back. We'll get them.
It's okay.
Magic fairies and
stuff.
We
can have Christmas wishes still.
So we are doing an impromptu episode because we are lucky enough where we have two sound editors for the first time ever.
This is good.
So it's currently December 16th. Our 15th episode just came out. Our January 1st episode is just like a best of for the year, which I don't have to do any work for.
Yeah. When's episode 50? Like, are we approaching episode 50?
That would probably be March.
Yeah. That could be a thing.
Depends if we count these as episodes. These little.
Oh, everything counts.
I'm in.
Very good.
So today we are joined by Sydney Flanagan.
Hello.
And Patrick Holland, the drummer of Over and Out.
Hello.
And yeah.
No, it really is awesome. We've got a lot of talent locally in Buffalo just like itching to come out from the woodwork.
Part of this is that I just like there are so many people I want to interview and so much music I want to play, and there's just not time for all of it. So, you know,
sure.
If John and Will aren't doing anything, I'll just push a little work their way.
You wouldn't necessarily catch these two humans on the same bill necessarily.
You
right?
should. I'd be really into that, to be honest.
It's actually happened quite a few times.
Yeah, quite a few times.
Yeah.
There's
some crossover.
Yeah.
Well, Sydney, you play solo, mostly acoustic with your singer-songwriter. It's not that it's not rock and roll. There is rock and roll. And then with Over and Out, you've got certainly the energy from this whole extra fiddling and, you know, like, obviously that's dance about and I think the rock and roll might be the thread here. There is a rock and roll thread.
Yeah, I'd like to say Over and Out should probably just call themselves Sally and Friends.
Sally and Friends.
Because it's all about Sally,
in my opinion. I think if you called it Sally and Friends, you just get confused with all of the other bands he's playing with.
This is very true.
Because Wyatt Coyne very much also could have been Sally and Friends. I saw that. That was at Tudor Lounge, and that was exceptional. She just, like, I feel like you could rehearse a song with her one time, and she just knows what to do. Yeah. She just seems to. Well, like Patrick.
That's how it is, really. So we'll have a practice. It'll be the four of us, and Sally, you know, has either a paper due, whatever she's got, other projects going on, and show it a little bit late. So I already know it. We have to worry about ourselves, and we don't have to worry about her.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's the great thing about it. And she is very dynamic in everything she does.
So with what she does she come in like at the end of the songwriting process to kind of add like stuff on the top, or is she kind of a part of? Do you guys write like together, or
we
is it like?
We usually write together. So Rob will usually come out with like a riff or something like that. He'll post it to us, say this is what's going on, this is what I have working on. And since there's like no egos in the room at all, everyone's like, hey, do you want to change this up? Do you want to change that up? But Sally can instantly just click on, like, turn it on, and it's right there.
So as a drummer, you're like a unifier in your part.
Yeah, so it's really just trying to match up with either what Sally's doing or what Rob's doing.
Yeah.
And she makes it so hard to follow her.
No, I think there are not many musicians who are the kind of people where you put them in any band and it just makes them better. And it's always, you're always lucky to have those people involved with your project.
Did you all start as a unit? Or
so,
how did the band form?
It was actually in 2018, it was like February, and Rob posted this video of a song that was very slow, not something that Rob would normally post, because he's from City Power Radio.
Which
it's
you should
fast, punch you in the mouth kind of punk.
Check him out on Spotify. I'm a big City Power Radio fan.
And I seen him, like, I really enjoy this. So out of nowhere, we started commenting, like, hey, I'll play drums for it. We'll start a project. Andy commented, he'll play bass. Brian was like, I'll play keys, and then he's like, I got Sally too. So within about an hour and a half or 2 hours, so we had a five group band ready to go.
Just and join
like,
her.
Just like, it was like a week later, just gathered up in my basement, and the first song that we wrote was Drinking's Not the Problem.
Nice.
So is that where you primarily were rehearsing?
Actually, we rehearsed in the basement, yeah.
Okay.
We actually kind of, before it was just kind of like this dungeon-looking thing. It was really sad looking. Like,
was it the Music Mall?
It was, no.
Okay.
No, God, no.
Anytime I hear dungeon, I think yeah. Music Mall.
So my basement, like, it's got like the white like brick walls and stuff in the basement, and there's like this overhead light, and it's just gleaming, and it's like something like from like, a horror movie. And I mean, we gotta clean this up a little bit, so... kind of put moving blankets up on the walls and everything to kind of reduce the sound getting out.
Sure.
Hung up some like Christmas icicle lights, something like that.
Oh, nice, yeah. Get a little atmosphere in there.
Yeah.
We got the backdrops hanging up. We got a couple of them now. So.
Well, you've got to make that a creative space.
Any posters in the space?
I'm actually framing some. I actually have some of the flyers that we have.
That's awesome.
Nice. The first big show we played on, which was with the Tossers, which was absolutely amazing. Could not believe the response we got from there. Sold out of hoodies in like an hour from that place.
Yeah. No, informing. Okay, so the trajectory of your band, when you're practicing, you're putting your music together, how long does it take for you as a group to put together your first show and start playing live?
We played our first show in July in 2018 at the Rose and Crown in.
So you're talking about having, you know, rehearsed maybe 6 months or so?
Probably 6 months.
Cool.
Probably 6 months or so, then we headed out to Rochester, played probably maybe like a half an hour, 45 minute set there.
Great.
Mostly songs that are just on our EP.
Yeah.
We had nothing really from the album yet. Then after we did that one, we played another show a day after that, I think with you guys actually.
Oh, when it was with Sus.
Yeah, over at Stamps.
Yeah.
On that following Monday.
Yeah.
Which was a... Mondays are the worst.
Oh, God, yeah.
So then how quickly do you go into recording? And
we
put together your first
EP,
right?
Strictly ourselves.
Okay.
Brian did an amazing job on tracking drums, getting everything done. It was probably a 3 or 4 month process of us recording everything ourselves, getting everything done bit by bit by bit. Had the drums done in a day, though, which I'm extremely proud of, because that was the goal.
No, I'm really interested in the DIY time frame. I think that these things that you're putting together in your 6 months of newly forming a band could take you the 18 months, you know, otherwise you've been able to get yourselves a crowd and a following, and actually, as you said, you had merch then too already ready for your first show.
So that was February this year.
Okay.
February this year we played with the Tossers.
Yeah.
Or no, March, excuse me, because it was around St. Patrick's Day. That's usually when the Tossers like to tour.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
When they get the biggest draw for them. But yeah, we had shirts. We usually have shirts and hoodies and stuff like that. Hoodies are a little more expensive to get, so we run out of those quickly.
What was your biggest show? Attendance or
I mean the Tossers, just because it was the Tossers that was the biggest one. However, there was the show that we played with our friends in Cardboard Homestead and Dreadnecks.
Ah.
And that was just a hell of a show at Good Bar.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's the one where where everything started to
What
really
do you think of Good Bar as a venue?
It varies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Varies. No, I think that's actually a really good way to put it.
It really varies. Like, we've had a tremendous show. Like that one show with the Dreadnecks was amazing. I've never played in a band where people sing along to your song.
Right.
Oh, isn't that like the first time you see that like that gives you the goosebumps
like,
a little bit.
No, like, yeah, you know what? You guys know the band, you know the songs, you know the rhythms, whatever it is, but to know the lyrics and to sit there and sing along with them was something
I've never been able to experience.
I'm 33 years old. I've been doing this since I was like 15.
Sure.
So
it's great.
I've never been able to experience that before. Which is
you're old like me.
I also think the first time you play in like a mosh pit forms. That gave me the same kind of feeling as people singing along. It's like people are into this. Like it's fucking awesome. It's a great feeling.
Well, and it probably reflects your energy back at you in a way that, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. You definitely feed off of that. So like 3 or 4 months for our first EP is.
Yeah, so we recorded.
That's actually a really good time.
Well, we recorded probably a couple months after the first show. Did the whole process there. We had it recorded, mixed, everything going. Released it on February 1st.
Patrick, I think when you hit the table, it makes my mic vibrate.
I'm very sorry.
That's all right. I've been saying you're trying to figure out. I'm like, it's shaking, and I'm not touching it. But I also have tremors, so if I touch it, it's just going to shake more.
I'm still used to talking with my hands.
We've actually had guests where they will, like, pound the table.
We should have a live drummers. Little table drum set. Exactly.
I want to have all sorts of... Sid's actually going to play for us in a little bit. I want to
be able to
do all sorts of live music stuff in here eventually, so...
Maybe. Sydney, can I talk to you?
Yes.
I'm very interested in your songwriting process because, so you were playing were you not playing with a trio? You were playing with...
I've been in like a million bands? Projects. Like I was playing violin in a band with my friend Josiah.
Gotcha.
For a while, and he's in Cardboard Homestead now.
Okay.
But I remember it was like, and then I had this band called Susford. It was kind of a bit of like a indie punk fusion
right.
band, and that was going on for like about a year.
What does sus mean?
Sus, it's like...
I was actually wondering about that.
Actually, it's like suspect. It's like a slang, like, oh man, that's sus, bro. Like,
gotcha.
I don't know, or like, oh, like, what a susser. Like, I don't know, it's just kind of like, it was like...
No, I wasn't sure if it was an acronym for something or if it was an abbreviation. Now I've got
my
that
My bandmates and I at the time, it was kind of like, just like this word we threw around, and it was just like part of our language, and it even branched off, and we would be like, tuss, like, oh, I'm tussing on that. Which also just means, like, I'm fucking with it. Like, it's just... They, I don't know, it was just some stupid little word that just, like, felt like it bonded us almost.
Well, yeah, I know, definitely.
Yeah, so we're just, like, we feel like it fit our image the best, too, yeah.
So with your projects, musically, you were writing, you were the poet of the lyrics, you were driving that part?
I mean, I'd always written solo since I started playing out when I was 17, I started writing when I was about 14.
Gotcha.
Once I had a band for the first time, that I was like, that wasn't a band I was just playing violin for or something, because that's very different than fronting.
Oh, absolutely.
And once we started doing that, like, at first I just wrote a bunch of songs and was like, let's play these, build some chemistry. But over time, once we had, like, really bonded as musicians, we would just be at practice and we might stray from the practice and just kind of jam, and then we would be like, oh wait, that sounds cool, and then
write that for a minute.
We'd have this whole jam, and then we'd just kind of like iron it out, and I would just be like, I'll throw some words over this, and sometimes I would just sing random words
right
like jam, and then I would just be like, I kind of liked that one little thing I said, and then I would just take it and run from there, and you know.
Oh, I love it when you can create songs organically like that.
I love like that feeling of like almost like communion with your band, where you're just like kind of like all experiencing this little moment together.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I like how the one thing that I listened to on your Facebook page that was just a video, a very candid, you know, post. I liked how you had vocal mobility, where it seems like if you were playing along and it's your song and everyone's riffing off on different parts, you could do that vocally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely like singing the most.
It's hard to say that about yourself, but I can tell you that I can hear such a freedom in your voice that it goes to stranger places than you'd expect it to.
Thank you. I like the description. Like in stranger places.
No. So as you're writing, your primary vehicle is guitar?
Yeah.
Okay.
I started out on ukulele.
That's cool.
I actually thought I'd never be able to play the guitar. I used to envy people. My dad started buying me guitars when I was 10, and I could just never get it down
sure.
and frustratingly play it in like my living room as a kid and just be like, I can't learn this dang thing. And then when I was 14, I picked up the ukulele, and I was like, I can do this.
So violin, then ukulele? Like, were you taking violin in school?
Yeah, I was like fifth grade when I started.
Yeah.
So,
but the ukulele helped me transition over.
Sure.
Guitar much more smoothly, and then I was just kind of like, oh, this is not so hard now, and it's great because now I feel like it's so much easier to write songs when I have that accompaniment. You know,
Well, I can also see how the ukulele from a violin with your four strings to a four strings gets you to the guitar.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
So now you're parents, were they both in a punk band?
No, but my mom was very much in the scene.
Okay.
So was my grandmother. She was,
wow.
They were all a very long line of punk rockers.
Awesome. So you're a legacy is what you're telling me.
Oh, yeah. Next wave.
I'm cool. That'd be awesome. My parents don't like
kinda
it.
I kind of want to interview her grandma and be like, so what were the punk venues
like?
Oh,
man. Oh,
yeah. She's been there pretty much my whole life now.
So we'll get back to the music. I want to talk. You're in a movie.
Yes.
So, and it's premiering at Sundance, and that's super exciting. So what's the name of the movie?
The movie is named Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, and it's written and directed by Eliza Hittman.
Cool. Has Eliza done any other directing?
This is her third feature film.
Cool. Do you know what the other two are?
Her first one was a more low-budget one called It Felt Like Love.
Okay.
And her other one was like, her bigger one is called Beach Rats. You can actually watch it on Hulu.
Oh, I think.
Yeah. Is she local?
No, she's in New York.
Yeah. And what is your connection then? How do you get involved with these projects?
Well, it's very strange and very unconventional, actually, because I did not try to have an acting career. I was more focused on having a music career.
Yeah.
When I was about 14, her partner, Scott, was in Buffalo. He's from Buffalo, and he was working on a film on Juggalos, actually. You guys ever see that short, Buffalo Juggalos?
I think I have.
Okay, well, that was Scott, and at the time, I was dating someone who was squatting.
Who was a Buffalo Juggalo?
At Juggalo House. Oh, my gosh. So I was there visiting my boyfriend, and...
How does a Juggalo house differ from a punk house?
Oh, it's much stranger. So weird.
Oh, but, God, that's a whole nother episode right there.
Man, I went to a wedding there, a Juggalo wedding.
Okay.
And whereas I actually, Eliza, Scott was filming stuff from the wedding, and Eliza was visiting Scott while he was working on this film, and me and her met in passing, kind of, and I don't really recall meeting her, but I guess she remembers. And they followed me on social media, and they would watch my videos of me playing and stuff, and I guess she just thought that I had a lot of something.
So she sure. picked you for the character as she had written... She's a writer-director?
Okay. It's not like she wrote with me in mind.
No,
but
that's
she,
so neat.
But she definitely like reached out to me all these years later and was like, hey, you should audition for this film. And I thought the email was spam.
Oh, absolutely,
I was
yeah.
like... Yeah, right.
Thanks, Nigerian yeah. prince. I'll be sure to do that.
Yeah, but then they, at first I actually kind of was like, well, I'm not an actor, and I have a band, I have a job, and I was working at a fucking grocery store. What is it?
Yeah.
It was a bunch of excuses, and then I talked to my bandmates about it, and they were like, you should do it.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
So I was like, well, it's just a tape. Well, so I did the tape. So they sent me a scene, I read the scene, and then Eliza was like, well, it's kind of hard to tell from this tape, so I'm just going to fly you down, which is the most unconventional part. They don't just fly people out for auditions.
Oh, sure. Now, was that Philadelphia that they did it, or?
New York.
It was New York. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, and so I came down, and they just, her and the cinematographer, this really awesome woman, Helene, we just kind of walked around the city, and they, you know, just, like, filmed me, and then we read some scenes, and I was just kind of like, okay, and then I came home, and, like, not even too much longer... After they called me, I was just like, okay, you have the part. And I'm just like, oh, I didn't think I'd get this.
So is it a substantial role in the film? I mean...
Yeah, it's
been, I'm excited just talking to you about it.
Yeah,
it's cool.
A lead role, so it's a lot.
No, shit. How does that
work.
Happen?
Good
for
like,
you
have an IMDb page. Is that like, does that excite you?
Oh my
Cause
God,
like,
it's so weird. I'm just like, my mom loves IMDb actually. She's just so excited about it. She's like, ugh, because like I can be watching a TV show with my mom. She'll just be like, I know that guy. And she's like, IMDb.
Oh, absolutely.
So the movie, obviously it's kept up. It's all that. Has it been screened already?
So I just got to see it a few days ago.
Wow!
It was I flew out, and we did like a private screening with my co-star and my manager, and it was like so weird and surreal to see myself like on like a large screen.
Yeah.
Oh sure.
It was very much like I was just like, oh, that's me, but I was also very relieved because at first I was like, I was a little scared, you know, because I had never acted before, so I didn't know how it's going to go. But I was actually, like, very much like, whoa, I can actually do that.
Yeah.
So it was very exciting. Like, I didn't realize. It's just so weird because I've been trying so hard to be a musician for so long, and I didn't realize I had this other potential,
right.
You know.
So now you'll have connections in that way. So, yeah. Wait a minute. You're going to Sundance to this?
Yeah.
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 She's like, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Oh, my
gosh. Wait, so, wait. I'm lose. Where is Sundance?
It's in Park City in Utah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's a whole
there's so many. I always get confused. All right. Yeah. Excited about Utah.
I thought Sundance for some reason was held in Toronto, but then I remember it's IFC is in Toronto.
And then there's Cannes, yeah. Too, and I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like a weird place for a movie festival, Utah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's the correct answer.
You go skiing? Can you go? No, that's... You could take a little no.
There's a,
no,
you there's, can, there's, it's a ski town where we're going.
Okay. Oh, there
skiing,
you go.
Yeah, but
okay.
I probably won't be skiing. I'll be using all my free time to relax because it's
oh, yeah.
A lot. So we're doing a whole day that's just dedicated to press. So grueling, just answering the same questions all over and over again. And
yeah.
Doing that whole thing, but it's also exciting. So.
Did you get to meet Ryan Eggold?
Oh, yeah, I worked with him.
Is
so cool.
Is he, like, he just seems like a really nice guy. For those...
He's awesome.
For those who don't know, he was one of the bad guys in The Blacklist on NBC, and he plays the Doctor in New Amsterdam, which is on Fox, which is... I've only seen, like, the first five or six yeah. episodes. I really like the show. It's something I'd recommend. It's rare to see a Doctor drama that's not, like, super horribly negative and stuff sometimes. So I really... I liked what he brought to that. He seems like a nice guy.
Oh, he's great. He was in Black Klansman, too.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah. But, yeah, he was really cool to work with. Actually, I really loved working with Sharon Van Etten, wasn't it?
Yeah.
She's a freaking amazing musician. Mm-hmm. And she got to play my character's mother in the movie. And it was so cool. I was just like, wow, you're like a super amazing artist, and I love you. It was just so cool to work with her. She was so sweet. And yeah, Ryan was very cool too. I think he was only on set for a day or two.
What about the music in the film? Were you involved in that process at all?
There are two scenes where my character is a musician, but it's not really based on me being a musician.
Okay.
Because the opening scene, I believe, is like a talent show, and I'm playing a song from the 50s.
Okay.
A lot of, and then there's like a karaoke scene where I'm singing. But the thing is like...
Did they want you to be good for those in particular? Or like
I was allowed to be good, but not too good. So I'm very dialed back. You know, it was
she's like, because actually I'm real good.
Oh, yeah. I have the same problem when I have to dial back my awesome. It's really hard sometimes.
Because like, I'm very much like, I just like to shove all of my emotion out, but like I had to kind of bring it down and be like a little more.
What is your character's name?
Autumn.
So yeah. You're like, Sydney would rock this, but Autumn's gonna be like 85% today.
Yes. Yeah, because it was very strange, you know, because like I can, like in the one scene, like when I did the first take, I kind of just did it how I would do it. I remember the audience was supposed to look unenthusiastic, but everyone started clapping. And I remember the assistant director was like, okay, let's do that again, but try not to be so enthusiastic. And it was just kind of, and everyone laughed, and I was like, cool. I was like, this is probably like the biggest crowd I've ever played to, because it was like a staged crowd.
Oh, sure.
So you were taping in New York?
Yeah, we did a week in, like, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And then we did the rest of it in New York. It was actually shot in, like, I think 27 days.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like 2 months because we never had days off. But that it's a lot to do in 27 days.
I'm kind of tired just thinking about it. Yeah. Like, sounds pretty intense.
It was, like, every day was at least a 12-hour day.
What an adventure.
It was exhausting.
So, wait, when was this actually being filmed?
It was in February to, like, yeah, March, I think. Yeah, because
okay.
I came home in April. So,
wow.
March, April. Yeah.
No, I think that's...
I remember seeing, like, your post on Facebook, and, like, it's like, Sid's going to New York City to act. It's like, she's never coming back. have you talked about other movie roles with people? Like,
yeah.
Like, where's this taking you?
I'm working with a manager now. And
awesome.
We're already looking at some other stuff. I just sent in an audition for another film, and I had a meeting with a director for something else when I was in New York this week. So looking at stuff.
Do you think you'll be staying in Buffalo then, or do you think you're going to just have to move out of...
I don't know. I haven't, I figured right now it's working, because, you can always send tapes and things,
Oh, sure.
But, I don't know if... If it comes around to that, maybe, but I'm not really ready to make that step just yet.
Sure.
Kind of still waiting for the film to be released and for all that to happen and kind of see where it goes and just kind of ride the wave.
Sure. It's worth noting, too, that, Buffalo is so cheap to live here. My wife does freelance work online, and, someone offered her a salary, and I'm like, listen, that's okay for Buffalo money, but this person's in D.C. You can ask them for more, because that's...
Yes.
So I think that's a real good draw for staying around, even if you do have to do some traveling.
It's so expensive to live in New York, so... I don't know. Why make things harder on myself? It would be easier, maybe, for working purposes, but I figure, If for some reason I ever have a consistent income that makes it look more like an option, then I'll consider it more as an option,
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, Sid, you want to play a song for us?
Yes, I can do that.
All right. I'm gonna pause everything and let you get all your stuff set up. I have a Christmas present for everyone. If you remember back in September, I think, we very briefly ran a Patreon, and one of the things we had was called Asking for the Hurt, where you could spend $5 and I'll make fun of you on the podcast. We had one person do that, and it was Astrobula, and he was wonderful about it, and I created this drop where I strained my voice so hard I actually hurt my hernia.
Right.
Doing it. You remember that.
Old man.
I have an outtake of me trying to do that drop, and this is my Christmas present to all of our fans, because this is fantastic. So you listen to me giggling about that while we set up Sid. Asking for the hurt. Asking for the hurt. Oh my God. okay, it fucking smells in here now. I gave myself the hurt. I'm in a bathroom and it's still in here, the smell. Asking for the hurt. Why does it keep asking for the hurt? All right, and we are back, and that was a minute of me farting to lead up to.
We're so blessed.
Is that the best opening act you've ever had, Sid?
Oh, I'm just so honored. She's disgusted, is what she is. She's disgusted.
At some point, that was going to happen with the guest. So, all right. So this is the new song. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, honestly, I think it speaks for itself a little bit. I think the story is a little too personal and too soon to tell, so I think it might
completely understand.
Yes, but I could say this. I definitely had been trying to write this song for a long time, for the past 4 months, because it started as the first two lines, and I was stuck on those two lines for ever, and I would just write little pieces of it in frustration, because I'd be this is something I need to get out of me, but I just could not find. I could just not finish it, and it was frustrating me, because I felt shouldn't this be coming to me more easily, and so, but I finally finished it, and now I'm great, it's out, and, I can finally chill on it, kind of.
Yeah.
As a catharsis. Yes. Okay. Yeah, it does not have a name yet, so this is a song.
Thank you.
some the real applause didn't count as much as that fun.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Sid. That was amazing.
Cool. Definitely messed up a couple times. That's cool.
Hey, no one's heard the song before. Yeah. I didn't hear anything. Did you, Cassidy?
No, it was dynamic.
Man, I was just thinking as you're playing that, the amount of local female talent that I've seen just recently, the more I've been going out lately, is just fantastic. Between you and Stress Dolls and Carmen and Lizzie and Shannon Vanderlyn and Jen DeSantis and Eleni DeJort, like, it's just, it's really great.
I think we've got a real open mic thing, too. Like, there is quite a gender balance in Buffalo to that level of... you know, initially stepping out. I like that part.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, you played at Babeville, right? You played in the...
Yeah, I opened for Mel Blum, which is one of my favorite artists, so it was so exciting. I saw they were coming to Buffalo, and I was just like, I have to open for them. And I...
So you reached out to them?
Yes, I...
Hey, I'd love to do this?
Yes, I emailed... their booking agent, I emailed their personal email, I emailed I emailed everybody that I found an email for, and then finally somebody from Babeville got back to me and said that they'd reach out to Mel Blum, and they didn't even have any openers, so like last minute they were just kind of like, hey, they said they'd have you on, they only have a $75 budget, and I was like,
only.
You're gonna pay me to play. I'm volunteering.
And I was like, yeah, I want to open really bad, so please. So I was like freaking out when I saw that. I was at work, and I remember I was just like, the break room, just like, what? This is sweet.
That's excellent.
I think one of the number one things I always tell them is just ask.
Right.
Like, the worst that you can happen is get a no.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, I've jumped on bills with really cool bands at Mohawk where I'll just reach out and be like, I don't see an opener. And they're like, we'll just contact the band. And the band's like, yeah, sure. Like, I mean, the bands typically, like, if they're in a city that they don't know of, they don't care. Like, yeah. I hate to put it that way, but they don't care. Like, you know, they just need someone there who's going to bring some people and not...
Well, they care if it's a fan of theirs.
Oh, yeah, sure.
In their own right. You know, but maybe they'll invite you to come hop on the...
Well, I guess what I was saying is, like, they'll say yes. And it happens. Often,
exactly.
And I always tell people, like the worst thing that ever happens with that is they say no, and then, you know, people aren't going to get mad at you for
your
asking this stuff, you know.
Is rewarded.
Absolutely. I think so.
Yeah. And it was really amazing, because after I played my set, and I saw, they stood outside for, like, one of my songs, and then they went back into their green room.
Sure.
But they, when they were playing their set, they went to play a song, and they actually said, they were like, Sydney actually said something in her one song, and I really related to it, and I was just like, you related to me.
You listen to my songs. I listen to your songs.
I was so excited. It was a very wholesome and validating moment. It was really cool.
Do you have anything? Do you have anything, Kiss?
This entire podcast experience is wholesome and validating to me.
Oh, shucks. Actually, since we have a kind of a break, there were a couple small notes I had of things I wanted to talk about. First, if you're listening, WNYMusic.com is relaunching.
Wow! Yeah.
Here's your sound effects thing.
Thank you.
If you guys want to use the sound effects thing, you can as well. It's for everyone.
Here, this one's for you.
We heard that. What we heard me farting earlier. We don't need a sound effect. We're just gonna sample that. Yeah. But yeah, we need everything. We need photographers, bloggers, back end people, from programming to data entry, and it is for musicians, it is by musicians. My plan for the advertising space is we're going to buy up enough advertising space to pay for the cost of the website, but then any other advertising space that's available is going to go to local musicians who have shows and albums to promote, with preference going to volunteers for the website.
Right.
So, but if you want to get involved, it's something you can do completely remotely. We have people, I have Fredonia students helping me, I have local people helping me, you know, if you want to be involved. Yeah.
I mean, what else do we have as far as concert calendar and uniting media form? It's maybe local radio station concert calendars, but this is so much more artist infused, and
absolutely,
you know, we're able to then link other media if there's an article to share.
So we're starting, we're going to have a complete list of Buffalo bands, just like the old WNY Music had. That list is currently around 515 bands.
Wow.
I'm not looking forward to putting that in. We're going to have an event calendar coming out immediately with it, and we'll have our blog, and then we have all sorts of extra functionality and extra stuff we want to throw in later. Hopefully we can. We're going to have a little Spotify thing on the front page to highlight a band every day,
right.
And our first featured blog piece is going to be one that I'm working on called 37 Bands That You Need to See Right Now, which Over and Out is one of. I think you might be number one on the list, actually.
Oh, wow.
I love you guys. You guys are awesome. Like, I think you're, like, I love the Rob, you know, Rob listens to a lot of Bright Eyes. You know, I've never spent any time hanging out with Rob, but I just get the feeling, like, he listens to a bit of Bright Eyes. But I think having something like that is really cool because, you know, you have a lot of songwriters who kind of cop to that kind of influence. But you guys do it so differently that I think it really sticks out for me.
What's funny about this, so back in like 2007, 2008 or so, I first seen City Pod Radio, and I fell in love with it.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this was the most amazing thing in the world. Like, everything just flows so nicely. Ghetto Steve is a hell of a...
Oh, yeah, I've jammed with him a couple times. He's good.
The way he does punk drumming is just amazing. I can't even follow pace to it. That's how good he is at it. But I wanted to start a band with Rob back then. And then, of course, I got married, had kids, bought a house, had a real job I had to take care of. I'm like, well, I guess I really can't make music anymore since I had, like, a night job and really can't do anything. Got a new job, bought the house in the basement, started a band. It was a horrible band. It was...
What band was it?
It was changed, like, three times. It was Huth and then some other crap and then Evicted. And it was just the worst thing in the world, and I hated playing it. I would find ways to cancel practice. Like, I just can't do this anymore. And then I started Over and Out while I was still in this band, and they acted like I was like a cheating girlfriend.
Oh God, that's the worst.
So I had like this whole like barrage of messages like calling me like a piece of shit. How are you gonna go behind our backs and do that? And I'm like, I never behind your backs and did anything. People have other projects. And that's what I said. The next day I said, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as that happens, it's like, if you guys aren't cool with me just dictating my free time,
pretend
really.
It's not your house and be like, my mom says we can't play anymore.
Oh.
So then, you know, with Sally and everybody else coming over too, you know, that was something that I fell in love with doing.
Better energy. You guys seem like family, like the way that you're describing your dynamics.
There's no egos in that room at all.
No, even just seeing you guys on stage together, you get that feeling. It's just, it's one cohesive group. Yeah. It's not like Sally's like jumping out in front of the stage and soloing with like the spotlight on her on like a catwalk or something. Because there are local bands who do shit like that, fuck them. They're terrible. I'm okay saying that.
We all bring something to the table. I'm like, I've gotten better playing with them.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, things that I never thought I was capable of doing, I found myself doing, being able to, when you play with better people, you seem to get better.
Absolutely.
You want to match their talents. You want to go, I can play with you.
Yeah, you want people who push you to be better.
Yeah. And fell in love with it. Just started doing it. And then the first couple performances we had were very bland. You know, because we were just starting out, we didn't know what we were doing. We were like, we all played shows before, but never together. So Rose and Crown, and then Stamps, and all of a sudden everything just started to click a little more, started to move, more stage presence from everybody, having more fun. It's more of a party now.
Yeah.
So, works out well. We rehearsed a set for like a week before the show, and then... Really good to go.
It's nice when you can kind of get automatic like that. And if you want to see Over and Out, I don't know.
I was just going to ask when they're up.
Literally have no idea when this episode is going to be available, but they are playing Festivus.
Yeah.
On December 28th, which I'm going to keep talking about. It is going to be so awesome.
I'll be there and be square.
I am actually taking part in the Seinfeld burlesque. They are doing. I'm keeping my clothes on. When they asked, when they talked, they're like, so we heard you'll be interested. I'm like, well, what does this involve? Like, first. So they're doing a Seinfeld Christmas Carol, where it'll be the girlfriends of George's past. So my job is going to be to wear a bald wig while women take off their clothes in front of me and berate me.
Okay. You're
so
going to love it.
I call it Saturday night anyway. So, but yeah, no, like, it's a really diverse lineup. We've got Omri Monroe. We have Josiah, you were talking about before, performs as Nicotine Jones. He's going to be there. Hooked on Cassiophonics, Over and Out. Oh, man. DJ Sayotos is going to be there. We have two projectionists who are going to be showing Seinfeld stuff and some other art on the wall. We have mini art galleries on the two, like, sides of the stage where they usually have seating.
And we'll have the new 2020 infringement gear, no?
I hope so. We had some problems with that. The email address that was getting all of the information just stopped working.
Yeah.
So we had to extend everything by 2 weeks, so we're really hoping it'll be ready. The design looks really cool. I think we're just sending in the sizes today, so it will hopefully be ready by then.
I want a hoodie for Christmas, and I've been a very good girl this year.
I absolutely, you gotta get a lot of that stuff while it's there, too.
That's
or at
what
least
I mean.
Last year, there were, I love my blue infringement hoodie in large.
Right.
There were two of them. Now I'm pissed off I didn't buy the second one. So, yeah, if that's your thing, get it on soon. The Over and Out's also playing at Nietzsche's on the 3rd. Is it the 3rd?
No, the 3rd with Scarecrow
Show.
And Dreadnoughts.
That's going to be an amazing show. Make it up. I heard Wyatt Coyne was supposed to be on that, too, but ended up having to not make it. That would have,
They don't like winter shows.
That makes a lot of sense, because I just offered them some, and they said no very quickly. All right.
They don't do winter shows.
Sure.
They don't like it. And I can understand, especially, most of the shows that are here.
I mean, are they Rochester? Are they more in, the Boone, Delavan area?
But they're, Batavia, Rochester.
Okay, so in nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about, too, real quick. I just want to thank my staff. I don't do that enough. Cassidy, thank you. You're awesome. No, we have Cassidy, we have Will and John are our sound editors, Jessica and Danielle are our social media people, and you guys do way more work overall than I do. So
you do a nice job of delegating and spreading things out and making us all feel like we're getting something, great out of it at the end.
Thanks. So that's what I'm shooting for. Everyone
Wait
does a good
minute.
Job.
I can.
Oh,
see
I get.
There we go. You get the button too.
Two applauses and a fart. I'm up.
Stink.
So yeah, I just want to take this. I don't do that enough. Actually, I have a Christmas present for you. Podcast staff Christmas present.
It's gonna be another stinky sound bed of.
No.
Hernia.
No, it's no. This is just for you, Cassidy. This isn't for our listeners.
No.
Uh-oh, that sounded really bad, didn't it? I'm just going to fart for you. We're just going to go in the bathroom for a little bit with the door closed.
Okay. We're over it. I get enough potty humor with my 8-year-old at home, man.
I'm sorry. I'm in a band with, 19 and 20-year-olds, so I'm just kind of around it.
So that's the unifying force there, too.
Oh, no. Sometimes I'm like, I'm the only adult here, aren't I? And when I feel like the only adult, that's a fucking problem. Like when I'm the voice of reason.
You're lucky they let you hang out. You're on the cusp. He's being nice to me, and I'm saying mean
Thanks,
things
Cassie.
Like that. Like, who invited their weird uncle?
Oh.
I'm actually putting a new band together right now, and one of the guitar player I'm working with is actually older. He's a dad. He's he used to play in my dad's band.
That's so, well, yeah. I'm playing with Eleni, and she's 21, and I found out. I'm like, we jammed here in my apartment a few times, but for full drums, we can't do that in this apartment. So she's like, oh, we're practicing at my parents' house, and I'm like, oh, and I really had to think about this, and I'm like. Can you find out, what year did your parents graduate high school? Because, I just had, this horrible fear I was going to, show up at their door and it was going to be someone I went to high school with.
Yeah.
And just be like, what the hell are you doing here? But her parents are, 4 years older than that. But it's still really weird. But it's fun. I like playing with the younger musicians when I can. It's a lot less jadedness.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the older people I play with, and you don't get all of them, but you get a lot of people who wanted to make it and failed, and they're just bitter.
Yeah,
and instead of trying to do things to help the scene, they just want to complain about how bad it is. But
yeah, it's sad because it's so easy for it to happen to become to care so much about making it. And I think, as soon as you lose sight of, doing it for a purpose or a passion, that's, it's just, I don't know, I feel like the trying to make it thing, it'll just eat you up.
Oh, it absolutely will.
It's good to have ambition, you know, but if it's to the point where, like, that's the only thing that's going to satisfy you, it's like, you're just...
there has to be some realism there. You know, I always tell new musicians when they talk about making it that, like, I know internationally touring acts, and when they're not touring, they have jobs.
Yes.
The idea that you can just do that, like, it's not impossible, but, like, even a lot of the original music performers you see have to do these kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think as far as getting jaded is, I think a lot of these people that I'm thinking of, at least, you know, maybe they're just not good enough. And that's the thing. Like, it's you know, 1% of musicians actually, you know, really get to go out and make money. But I think a lot of them aren't willing to look in themselves and see the problem there. And they're like, well, I'm great, but Buffalo is terrible. And I think that's a different kind of jaded you get, that I am just so tired of dealing with right now. So I'm happy I'm working with some younger folks where I don't have to necessarily deal with that right now.
I've always wondered what the term for success really meant to music-wise. Like, oh, do you need to be signed to a major label here to have any sort of success in doing that? Because I view success as, hey, I get to play music with some of the best people I know, and that's more than enough for me.
That's actually a topic I've wanted to bring up, because I think it really differs from every musician what their definition of success is.
Yeah.
You know, I get to put on a show. I get to put on shows like almost every weekend, where I get to just take all my favorite bands and smush them together and hang out and have a good time. And you know, I wish I could make more money doing it, but like that's perfectly satisfying for me.
I think I don't even care so much to, you know, like, monetize my work.
Sure.
I think the only reason I would even want to is that I can have more time to work on music.
Sure.
Because I feel like I work so much at my other job that, like, by the time you come home, you're just burnt out.
Yeah, you don't want to pick up a guitar.
Yeah, and it's like, so I just wish I had more time to play music is really all it is, you know. I just want to do it, you know. So I think people are like, oh, if this could be my job, that'd be great because I can do it more.
Sure.
Because they love it that much, you know.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we all have bills that we already paid, to feed, mortgages, rents to pay, things like that. So, you know, we all have to go do our normal job. So if you are making money doing music, something that you love doing, absolutely go for it. I mean, there's nothing actually wrong with that. At the end of the day, though, you have to say really what makes you successful.
Absolutely.
Is it, oh, well, I'm making a ton of money here, or, you know, I look forward to practice every Sunday because I know what's going to happen here for the next 2.5 hours.
Sure. And I think some people even just get hung up on thinking, like, being in a band is the way I'm going to do it, instead of thinking, like, Sid is an actress now, and that kind of branches off of your music.
Yeah.
And I'm booking shows, and that branches off of music. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, I'm a fine musician, but I'm never going to leave my legacy doing that. But I can do all these shows and run the website and do all that stuff, and that's how I participate. And I think if we had more musicians who would look at, kind of see the big picture and say, you know, maybe if I did this too, or was in part of this, or tried doing something I'm doing different, I think you'd get a lot happier people.
I definitely think it's way better to, like, be involved in more aspects of the music scene than just being in a band, because, I mean, like, I feel you get more of a sense of community in that way, and it's more rewarding. You know, it's just kind of like we're all just giving back to each other in some kind of way, rather than just all...
I've had full-on arguments with people, and I tell them, like, listen, if no one comes to your shows, that happens. You can only complain about it if you go to see other bands.
Yeah.
Because, like, I hate it when people are like, well, no one goes to my shows. It's like, well, who do you go see? And they're like, oh, well, I don't really have time to go out. And it's like, then you can't do that. Like, we all have to be supporting each other. If you don't support everyone else, you can't affect them. No one's going to come and support you. And that's something I've learned with the other bands I was in. Like, I've been in good bands, and just no one gives a fuck if you don't, if you're not talking to them, if you're not helping them, if you're, like, if you're just putting out albums. Like, that might work a small percent of the time, but you have to include all the other stuff if you're going
to
be successful. Absolutely.
No, there should be no egos. You know, we all want everybody to succeed. We all want to be happy doing what they're doing.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, don't be a dick about it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I mean, people get reputations very quickly in this scene. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, and circling back to the thing about going to shows, I mean, I definitely understand that, because like, I work 4 to 12.
Sure.
Every night, pretty much, and like, and when I do have days off, there's, I usually try to find a show that's going on. But
sure.
Sometimes, you know, I have to catch up on errands and chores and
yeah.
things like that, and so I feel like another way, you know, if you're someone that has to work a lot of nights and you can't even make it out to shows, I think it's good to still even, like, share their stuff or, you know,
go yeah.
like, oh my gosh.
Know, try to, like, you know, try to at least support them even, like, online. If you
absolutely.
One of my favorite, Marty from Mohawk Place, yes. right? I love that I can have the kids tucked in bed at night and I can watch live feed what Marty's putting together at oh, Mohawk yeah. Place. Or just last week he had Tommy Stinson from The Replacements playing
oh,
in his living room.
Oh, I could find a ride. I wanted to go so,
I'm so
much.
It. I'm watching it in my living room.
Oh, he
and he's live feeding this show. And
do you know if that live feed is available anywhere? I would literally pay like $15 or $20 to watch that. I was so upset I couldn't, like, fucking The Replacements.
I know, right?
Jesus.
So you're watching the live feed, and you're like, oh, my ex-boyfriend's watching this with me at the same time. Oh, you know, Anita West from 97 Rockets. Jeff Myers is here. Nice to have everyone in Marty's living room. But this is the future, though, that you might look out into Mohawk Place that night particularly and say, oh, there's only, like, 20 people here in this bar. But maybe there's another 40 people watching on the internet
oh, yeah.
who
yeah.
will then share it with their friends, and all of a sudden, not that you don't want to be there live in person, but
sometimes you can't.
As we're in the winter months, or as we're, you know.
I would love to have the video equipment to do Periscope for all my shows, where
right.
if someone wanted to pay $3 and watch what's happening that night, they could. And I think I'd love to see that.
And there's networks of venues that have that, not only live, you know, sight on scene each night, but they have then the archives of all these great shows. And that's half of it, too, because in the moment, you're like, oh, maybe this show sucked. And then you go back and you watch it 10 years later. You're like, I rocked.
Oh, I love watching old footage of myself.
Or it
oh.
could be the opposite. It could be
sometimes
very embarrassing.
Sometimes I'm like, you know, you're too hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, this is pretty good.
Okay, well, we've got a few minutes left. I have a heavy topic I want to talk about.
Oh, you always bring us in at the end, huh?
Well, I'm not yelling about this time
oh,
as
good,
much.
Oh, good, no yelling.
As someone who's kind of in the middle of a lot of things that are happening, I'm getting a lot of accusations of misdeeds amongst men towards women, and now, actually, I'm starting to get women towards men. Like, I know, Sid, you're very conscious of women's issues. How, and Cassie too, how, I don't know how to treat this, because I don't know, like, I hate to bring up a name, but there's a certain person who I had to be taken off of one of my Planned Parenthood shows, and I did the research, and my research was that I don't think this person did anything wrong, but I don't know that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But as the names and the lists get bigger and bigger, and it really does, it is, he said, she said, you want to believe all of the accusers, but, you know, this is a scene where people lie. Like, you can't get around that. There are people who are going to spread shit no matter what. I'm curious just to see how other people would treat something like that, because like I said, my list of names is getting bigger and bigger, and I don't have any sort of access to, like, I'm not going to get a,
like,
private detective
like
for these people.
Like, accused sexual offenders of some kind of, you know, whether we want to throw the R word into things, whether you want to throw just, you know, your misogynistic or whatever else.
Yeah.
I think we've, as a whole, like, never mind the music scene, as humans, we got to get over this gender dynamic imbalance. Dynamic's been the word of the day for me.
Well, I mean, what I'm talking about isn't even is necessarily gender dynamics, because I've heard it the other way around.
Particular people because of their
misdeeds. Accused, alleged misdeeds.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is where the word comes is an alleged.
It's so strange, because it's hard, I think, to give, like, a general answer.
Yeah.
You know, because I think it's definitely a case-by-case situation. Because there are some situations where, like, when the news would come out about somebody, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I know they are. Like, I already knew that, but I never really said anything, but now someone's saying it, and I'm like, okay, cool. And there are some situations where I'm just like, I don't know about that. And, you know, it's, It's very complicated because, you know, you don't... Because the sometimes what's a really big problem is sometimes there are cases where women will lie, and it's just very damaging because it makes it so much harder for people to believe women's stories altogether.
Yes.
So, you know, so when there is one of those cases, it makes me very upset. And I think I know what you're talking about.
Is
there an overall plus side in the sense that people are communicating their problem?
Awesome that scumbags are getting called out.
Yeah,
I'm all for that. I mean, the fact is not everyone getting called out might be a scumbag, I guess is my problem.
I
think the minute you're accused of any sort of sexual misdoings, you're automatically a scumbag. As a father...
Like, don't put yourself
there. As a father, I wouldn't want anybody to mistreat my daughter.
Sure.
You know, and I'm sure the same thing with you and anybody. You know, there was actually in the band Evicted, the whole thing that led to this whole situation with me wanting to quit that fucking band was the front man.
Yeah.
And accusations and allegations that he was not.
I had a band get dissolved earlier this year because of the same problem.
Yeah, the frontman of that band was definitely, I can confirm, grade A scumbag. The rest of the members I'm actually pretty cool with. I used to play in a band, went to high school with their bassist.
Yeah. Everyone else was super cool, you know. We all had our misdifferences and things like that, but what it boiled down to was that I worked with this guy. I put my neck out there, got him a job, did this whole thing, and then all of a sudden I'm starting to notice different things about him. He's taking longer phone calls, speaking to her, and then you get to hear the anger in the voice, the yelling. Allegations that he's being accused of, and him admitting to over the phone, and then trying to apologize for them, but then you hear it again the same day. So that's what really led to this whole thing of me going, I can't do this with you anymore. I don't want you in my home. I don't want you near my children. I don't want you anywhere near me.
Yeah. I actually had someone say to me, what does the way I treat my girlfriend have to do with us being in a band together?
Everything.
Oof. Absolutely. Fucking thing.
Everything. It's the way that you treat people.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is. It's about how you treat people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when it comes down to it, you're being accused of this? Most of the times, you're being accused because you did something here. I've never really met someone that had went out from my and said, hey, I was mistreated by this person, and that was never, like, unsubstantiated. There's usually truth to it. And that's just usually, like I'm saying, doesn't happen, but I'm very into the big, you know, you have a right to sit there and say this happened to you. You have a right to come out and say that and accuse that person.
Absolutely.
You know, and if that's the case, that we're going to go back, like, hey, whatever's going on here, it just can't happen. You're being accused of it, own up to it.
Yeah.
Sure.
If you did it, just say, you know what? I fucked up. My head wasn't in it, whatever was going on, or I'm just a piece of shit, and this is what happened.
Yeah, and I'll take that. Like for me, I had someone admit that to me, and I'm like, if you're getting better, if I don't see it again, then that can happen. But for the people who just downright just, nope, didn't happen, like, that makes it even harder.
Yeah, because, like, especially when it comes to a point where they're very obvious, it's very obvious, like, that you're lying to me. I think I'd like to also note when it comes to, I think, handling that situation, I think one thing that's really important that people tend to, that makes it more difficult, is sometimes somebody gets accused and all of their friends are just like, my friend would never do that. And I think one thing that's important is, like, even if they're your best friend, sometimes you have to hold them accountable.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, you actually have to question your own friendship sometimes, as much as you have history. I mean, there's people that I have, that I've had years of friendship with, that I've had to cut off, you know, because I was just like, wow. You know,
yeah.
It's really hard, but it's just kind of like, you know, sometimes it's you have to do.
No, I gave someone a night at Milky's, and they showed me the bill, and I saw this one guy on here, and I'm like, he's a stalker, He's not allowed an infringement festival. Mm. You need to take him off the bill. And I ended up having a 30-minute... This is a woman having this conversation for 30 minutes defending him. Well, I've worked with him, and I haven't seen anything, and the few people I've talked to is fine. It's like, have you talked to any of the people over on this end? Well, no. And it's like, please, like, I don't care what you think. Just please just get rid of him. And that's kind of what it comes down to, but like...
Everybody has to form their own opinions.
Yeah.
We all just can't say they go off the work or whatever it is. Investigate yourself. But if you find them substantial, call them out on it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, don't just sit there.
Well, I think it's harder as an organizer, promoter of any event when you're dealing with these interpersonal dynamics.
Yeah.
You know, like where
it's like I'm dealing
with many of
these.
You have to make that call whether this person is blacklisted from performing and or attending. You know, and then whether, you know, you've got someone else maybe involved in the bill who's advocating both pro and con. I think it's because you're playing referee and babysitter.
Yeah, it really is.
And otherwise, you could let people be adult and choose to either communicate or not communicate, you know, and not have to babysit. But you are in this unique role where you have to say, I will not stand for it.
I'd complain, but I'd do it to myself.
Yeah, no, it's because you care, Ryan, because the truth is you could say, I wash my hands of this. Doesn't have anything to do with me. You people work it out. Talk amongst yourselves. Be grown-ups. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Could say, I'm putting my foot down, and I feel strongly enough that I don't want anyone... Like, if I were promoting the show, and again, you had someone on the bill who was in direct, you know, discord.
Oh, like, yeah. No, I'd
then,
never do
then
that.
Then you would not put yourself there, and you'd say, hey, we cannot have this type... It is very kindergarten classroom when you break it down.
Yeah, it is.
You know? And I understand the... significant. It's not insignificant. You don't want people feeling threatened personally.
Absolutely.
You know, scared for, is someone going to follow me out to my car after this show? Or, you know, that's a little much.
Sure.
But... I just
keep seeing more and more of it, and I think it's an important issue, and I want to keep talking about it so people know about it. So yeah. So on that really happy note, that's all we have
Merry
time for
Christmas.
Today.
Happy Hanukkah.
If they send it to me in time, I'll we'll play you off at the end here with let me get the name of the song. I don't want to. We will play you off with Almost There. It's what happens when we don't prepare. With Christmas Time All the Time by the Burkharts,
which is...
I haven't actually listened to it yet, but I saw the Burkharts had a Christmas single, and I'm like, I sent them something, and I'm like, we're playing it. So they'll be sending that, so we're going to play you off with that. So one of my favorite bands, they're one of the nicest bands in the area. Have you ever met
them? They wear the matching letters.
Yeah. I love them boys.
Yeah, no, they're awesome dudes. So here's Christmas Time All the Time from the Burkharts. Thanks
All
for listening
time.
This long, folks, and
the crowd goes wild.
They hold on a little too long.
It really feels
a little disingenuous at the end.
Yeah,
they're mocking us.
Well, that's all we have. The music scene's chaos. Please be kind to everybody, and keep on struggling. Thanks.
It's Christmas time, and it's Christmas time, and the world outside looks just like a snowball.